Sometimes when you come to a church this size, you see people from a distance and you don't get very many opportunities to interact with them and maybe draw conclusions or make judgments about who they are and what they are without any interaction. And not that that's all, you know, you can make positive deductions too. So you can, there's one young woman who came to Calvary Gospel Church, and she seemed like a really quiet lady, and of course, being around the Wells family, she didn't have much choice, but wasn't until she came to our outreach group in McFarland that I got to know her a little bit. And after a few meetings, whenever there was something that needed to be done, I usually sat on the right side end of the table, and she sat on the left end of the table to my left. And whenever I said we need to do this, I would look at her first, because she was the person who was always willing and ready to do what needed to be done. So I got to know Brooke Wells a little bit through that. And here she is again, standing up for the Lord, doing what she feels needs to be done. Please, Brooke Wells is going to come and do a five spot. Please welcome her.
Try not to cry as much as my husband. So when I was asked to do this, I started to think about what I would say. I asked God what he would want me to talk about. I was not a Bible scholar. I was not in Bible quizzing, I did not have the opportunity to go to Sunday school because I didn't grow up in church. But that's when two words came to me, courage and bravery. And the first thing that I think about when I see or hear those two words are veterans. I know it's been about 2 months since Veterans Day, but in my mind, they deserve to be honored every day. In my opinion, veterans have the ultimate courage and bravery. It doesn't matter if they were on the front lines or not in the line of fire. They left their families and friends to do what they had to do. Some people know that my grandpa was a Marine in World War II and the Korean War, and he'll always be my hero for that. He was the only one of his close friends that made it back home alive. He didn't sign up for that. It's not like he wanted to go to war. But that can be like us sometimes. We don't want to go into war with our spirit. It can be a lot of work, but it's what we were created to do. It's what God intended us to do. Many people fight for things that don't matter. We need to fight harder for God and his people. It can be difficult to keep pushing when you think you're not getting anywhere, to work so hard for something and not see the results in the time you expect to see them. But wouldn't it be better to know that you are trying your best and fighting your hardest to someday be with God than to think that maybe all of this, God, isn't real, or this church stuff isn't for me, and someday find out that you're wrong, and to end up somewhere no one would want to be. I sometimes wonder what the men who were fighting in World War II thought on the day they started in battle. For many of them, it was their last. Did they feel lonely? Did they think about their families back at home? Did they think about what they would do when they got home? Did they pray? I think about some scriptures that if I could, I would share with them. Scriptures that help encourage and make you feel you are not alone. And not only for them, but for us today. So Ecclesiastes 4:1 says, "Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors, there is power, but they have no comforter." Ecclesiastes 4:9-10, "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up." Psalms 27:13-14, "I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." And then Deuteronomy 31:6, "Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you." He will not leave you. It is our job to call on him, not only in the rough times. So what is it going to be? Are you going to be a brave, courageous soldier and fight for what you believe? Or is it just not for you?
Good job.
Thank you, Sister Brooke. It's a difficult message to hear and try to apply, because I think a lot of times maybe we don't realize we're saying, well, that's not for me, but that's what we're saying. So thank you, Brooke, for challenging us. If I could have you turn to 1 Samuel chapter 15. And while you're turning there, my computer just shut off as we were standing here. Technology. This is why they did it on paper for so long, right, Brother Caskey? Yeah. My paper's never shut off on me, ever. 1 Samuel 15. And while you're turning there, I noticed Sister Regnart there. Hello, Sister Regnart. For those of you that don't know, that's Brian's mom. Thank you for being here. And also, I was out recently in California with Brian. He needed a supervision when he travels. And so I was out with Brian, and his mom and dad and their family let me stay at their house for 3 days. So thank you so much for your hospitality. I'm just going to enter something in here quick. Yeah, it's a word computer, so there's like 14 digits to get in. So 1 Samuel 15, as we get going here, and we're going to start reading from verse 22. And this is Samuel talking to King Saul. Now, if you remember, the Israelites didn't have a king for so long, and then they get a king because they asked for one, and God's like, okay, you want a king, I'll give you a king. They get King Saul, and he comes in because he's big, and he's strong, and he's handsome, and he can fight. And so things are mostly going okay. They're trying to conquer people and so on. And there's this verse here when Samuel says, and you know what, let's start at the beginning, chapter 15, verse 1. So Samuel told Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his people Israel. Now listen to the words of the Lord. This is what the Lord of the hosts says. I witnessed what the Amalekites did to the Israelites when they oppressed them along their way as they were coming out of Egypt. Go and attack the Amalekites and completely destroy everything they have. Do not spare them. Kill their men and their women, their children and infants, oxen and sheep, camels and donkeys." Essentially, don't leave anything alive. Wipe out everything. This is a little bit sort of morbid, but it's Sunday morning and the kids are all in class, right? We're killing women and children and everything. This is kind of strange. But God has a purpose for this because he says, these are the people that came after my people many years ago. And I told them I was going to come after them swiftly. And so now you're going to be the weapon, the tool that fulfills this promise. So Saul summons his troops. This is verse 4. He counts them. He comes to the city of Amalek and he sets up an ambush in the wadi. He warned the Kenites, "Since you showed kindness to all the Israelites when they came out of Egypt, go on leave. These are the neighbors. Get out of here. I'm just here for the Amalekites. That's what God told me to do." Verse 7. So Saul struck down the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is next to Egypt. He captured Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, but he completely destroyed all the rest of the people with the sword. Saul and the troops spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, cattle, and choice animals. As well as the young rams and the best, pretty much the best of everything else. They were not willing to destroy them, but they did destroy all the worthless and unwanted things. Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel. This is God talking to Samuel. Saul has no idea this is going on at this time. And God says to Samuel, "I regret that I made Saul king, for he has turned away from following me and has not carried out my instructions." So Samuel became angry and cried out to the Lord all night. And early in the morning, Samuel got up to confront Saul, but it was reported to Samuel that Saul went to Carmel, where he set up a monument for himself. Then he turned around and went down to Gilgal, and when Samuel came to him, Saul said, "May the Lord bless you. Things are going great." I'm sneaking in some words here, so if it's not up there, it's my paraphrase, okay? "May the Lord bless you. I have carried out the Lord's instructions." Samuel replied, "Then what's the sound of the sheep and the cattle that I hear?" Saul answered, "Oh, the troops. The troops brought them from the Amalekites and spared the best sheep and cattle in order to offer a sacrifice to the Lord your God." Interesting, he says your God there. Interesting, he says your God, to the Lord your God. "But the rest we destroyed. We did do what he said." "Stop," exclaimed Samuel. "Let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night." Tell me, Paul says, Saul says. Samuel continued, "Although you once considered yourself unimportant, have you not become the leader of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel and then sent you on a mission and said, go and completely destroy the sinful Amalekites. Fight against them until you have annihilated them. So why didn't you obey the Lord? Why did you rush on the plunder and do what was evil in the Lord's sight?" "But I did obey the Lord," Saul answered. "I went on the mission the Lord gave me. I brought back Agag, king of Amalek, and I completely destroyed the Amalekites. The troops took sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best of what was set apart for destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God at Gilgal." And here's the key verse that really sticks out to me in this chapter. Then Samuel says, "Does the Lord take pleasure in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the Lord? Look, to obey is better than to sacrifice. And to pay attention is better than the fat of rams." When I was younger, I went to the Christian school here and all the grades. So I joke at work, I'm not good at sports, but I'm really good at ping pong because I went to a private school. But I went to the school the whole time. And yes, there were times when my mouth or my attitude may have gotten away from me, if we're being honest. And if you do something improper or maybe you disobey a teacher, which, yes, I did. I'm being honest now. I did do that from time to time. They would have you, at times, you'd have to sit in your class during break, and you'd have, like, timeouts and stuff like that. I say timeouts because I have kids now, and that's how I interpret it. Sounds so childish, but that's what it was. And It got to be where I must have been a little too disobedient at times, because then he started asking me to write Bible studies on it. But Bishop had me write a Bible study. Sister Rossing, who's probably teaching class, she's had me write, oh, I've probably written this Bible study 400 times. Right? And I always put this verse in there. You know, you got to obey. You got to obey. You got to obey. And I never really picked up on it until I started reading through the Bible a few times. And you know what interests me is that the book of Leviticus, so Genesis is all about creation and the starting of God's people, and Abraham and Exodus, they go to Egypt and then they come out of Egypt and God gives them the tabernacle. And the tabernacle, they take the whole second half of the book and talk about that. And then Leviticus, right? That book that you're all avoiding, but that's actually really good. The first 7 or 8 chapters is about sacrifices. And it's a little redundant. I mean, it's not. It says different things, but it feels redundant because it feels like they're telling you the same things. But here God takes the whole book of Leviticus, 26 chapters, 27 chapters, and goes through and tells you exactly how you're supposed to do stuff, how you're supposed to sacrifice things. Like, they talk about, like, stitchings on priest's robes. This is clearly important that God would take a whole book to talk about something. But yet here in 1 Samuel 15, he's like, I don't care about your sacrifices. Well, it seems like there's a little bit of a contradiction here, God. Do I not have to read Leviticus or do I not have to read Samuel? Which one should it be? I choose Leviticus. And so it interests me. And I started thinking. And for me, I have a little bit of my mind, I like to see patterns. If I can find patterns, I can understand how things work, right? And so I always thought growing up, this is the verse on obey. And the verse, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right. You know, obey them that have the rule over you. And commit yourself, for they watch for your souls. I know all these verses. I've written them thousands and thousands of times. But I didn't realize how many times God says he doesn't want a sacrifice. That was interesting to me. In Samuel 51, verse 16, we'll just read verse 16. So this is right after David has a man killed so he can be with his wife, that man's wife. And then the prophet says, what are you doing? He's like, oh, yeah, okay, I screwed up. This is bad. I'm gonna repent. And so he repents, a really good repentance. And in Psalms 51, in verse 16, this is what David's saying in the middle of his repentance. He says, you do not want a sacrifice, or I would give it. You are not pleased with a burnt offering. Psalms 40, verse 6 through 8. This is David again. Psalms 40, verses 6 through 8. He's saying it again. You do not delight in sacrifice and offerings. You open my ears to listen. You do not ask for a whole burnt offering or a sin offering. Amos 5. And I'm going through all these because I think it's important to realize these are all here. Amos chapter 5, verses 21. All these are either David or God speaking to his people, right, through a prophet. So Amos 5, verse 21, he says, I hate, and I'm reading from the Christian Standard Bible here, but I hate, I despise your feasts. I can't stand the stench of your solemn assemblies. Just getting together. I don't even like it. Why are you even getting together? Well, God, you told us to so long ago. We're doing it. We're getting together. Even if you offer your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. I will have no regard for your fellowship offerings and fattened cattle. Take away from me the noise of your songs. But God, you told us to bring all these things to you. So here's another verse where he's saying, I don't want it. Hosea 6:6. Hosea 6:6. He says this, for I desire loyalty and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. Hmm. Are you guys seeing a pattern? Are you seeing the pattern that God's not wanting sacrifices? Isaiah 1, 11 through 15. Another prophet that's speaking to the people of Israel. Isaiah chapter 1, 11 through 15. What are all your sacrifices to me? Asked the Lord. I have had enough of burnt offerings and rams and the fat of the well-fed cattle. I have no desire for the blood of bulls, lambs, or male goats. When you come to appear before me, who requires this from you, this trampling of my courts? Stop bringing useless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. He even goes on in verse 14 to say, they have become a burden to me. But in 19, he says, if you are willing and obedient, you will eat the good things of the land. I think about these verses and I think about how we don't have the tabernacle the way they had it then. We don't have the sacrifices. We don't have the priests. What do we have? We have this building. We have, you know, I put on a tie to preach this morning, right? We try to show some respect to God when we come here. We go to class. We have Bible studies. You know, all these things that are important. But the people of Israel had their version of that. And over the course of hundreds of years, the reason for it was completely forgotten. And what they were doing was just a task. They were just doing a task. They were mindlessly going about what was in front of them. I see this as sort of challenging and a little condemning and maybe convicting to the person who's been coming to God for myself, or who's been living for God for a while, to myself. I'm like, okay, God, what sacrifices am I bringing that are you not accepting? What are the things in my life that I'm just checking the box? What are the things in my life that are just, I'm doing it because, well, it says it and I'm just going to do it? Or maybe I want people to see me doing it? You know, it'll look good on Facebook, you know, it'll be there. But you know what's missing in all of that for me? My heart. My heart. Because he's saying, obey me, obey me, obey me, do these sacrifices. But then at the end, he's like, I don't want your sacrifices. So they're doing what he said, but he's saying you're not obeying me. Interesting. Interesting. I have children, and I think about how when I tell my children to clean their room, they will go into their room and walk around in circles and move stuff around. Right? You don't have to have children to know that. Wives, husbands, right? You know that. You know. They will go in. And guess what? They walk out and they did it. Yeah. It's just in a different spot. The pile has been moved. Right? It's clean. Because now I found that toy that I've been missing. Because I picked up the one pile and moved it over here. Right? But to me, it's not clean. To me, they didn't obey what I was intending. They didn't obey what I was intending. So if you're here and you've been in church for some time, maybe this is sparking something within you. Maybe you're realizing that some of the things I'm doing, I'm just checking a box. Maybe you're realizing that some of the things I'm doing, and let me just take a pause here and say, we are supposed to just do things because God told us to, right? However, I would spend more time working on what your heart is feeling and thinking about that and trying to get honesty with God before I would just do it, do it, do it, do it. Let's just take a pause sometimes and say, what's going on and why am I doing this? Pastor Roy's actually been talking about that recently and about letting go and letting God take care of some things, right? Now, I'm not telling you, now everybody should still come to church tonight. Obviously, that's not my message. Right? My message is, what's the heart of what you're doing? Why are we doing this? Is it to please other people? Is it to please ourselves? Is it to please God? And so that part of this message feels very, like I said, condemning, convicting, challenging to me. It almost makes me like, oh God, seriously, no, this is hard. But the other part of this, when I read through this, is very encouraging. If we go to Micah chapter 6 and verse 6, I'll just read from up there. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? No. This is somebody that's saying, clearly, I'm not where I need to be with God. I need to be closer to God. And I look back and I see all the things in life and I don't know what to do. Like, I need to wear a suit and I need to be in a church and I need to speak these fancy words. And I need to know this much of the Bible and I need to have attended a Christian school and I need to have all this. And God's saying, no. It's not that difficult. I don't need all that from you. I don't need 1,000 rams. I don't need you to give your firstborn. I don't need you to give me all the fat of the biggest cows and all this. And I got to imagine they're sitting there thinking, but you told us to do that. But he clarifies it in the next verse. I've shown you, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. This humbly with your God part is very, very challenging. The humbly with your God part is very, very challenging because it means that I'm putting myself down. I'm putting everything about me down. We're in the middle of a fast. This church, if you attend this church regularly, you know we're in the middle of a fast right now, so we are abstaining from certain things in our life. For the purpose, everybody's got different specific purposes, but overall, for the purpose of drawing closer to God. And it's tough. I remember 2 years ago before Jerry started coming to church here, Jerry preached a message about 6 months before he came to church here. It was an amazing message. And he said, you know, it's interesting that nowadays we fast the things that used to be sins. Right? We're constantly trying to move things away. But you know what's funny is this same message, if you go study fasting in the Bible and you look up all 38 instances where fasting, now it's mentioned more than 38, but there's 38 instances of fasting mentioned in the Bible. You look up every single instance of fasting in the Bible, you would be very surprised to hear that there's a lot of times God says, I reject your fast. I don't want your fast. This is a garbage fast. Right? Wow. That's so amazing to me. That's so strange. You want us to fast, it draws us closer to you. And God's like, yeah, but your fast means nothing if you don't have a humble heart. If your heart isn't right, you can not eat all the food in the world. You can emaciate yourself. You can make yourself look the worst in the world. But if your heart isn't right, it doesn't matter. So once again, I feel a simplicity coming from God. We're still going to continue with our fast. I'm not saying we should stop it. But we're watching our heart. And what's driving our fast? What is my fast? Is my fast to lose weight? Is my fast to get noticed? Is my fast just to simply do what my pastor wants? My pastor's not wanting this. He's being led of the Lord. He's being led of God here to direct our church to say, maybe we're just like the Israelites of old. And God's saying, hold on, take a break. You need to fast and you need to humble yourself. But in all those versions of fasting, when they talk about in the Old Testament, almost all of them, when he talks about it, he's like, nope, I want a humble heart. He's like, you think you're going to wear sackcloth, which is what they did to show that they were sad for their deeds, right? You're going to wear sackcloth, this old ratty clothes, and you're going to put ashes on, right? Don't care about it. Doesn't matter to me. But it's interesting because you hear stories about King Ahab, one of the most evil kings in the Old Testament. One of the most evil kings in the Old Testament, King Ahab. And what is, he do? Him and his wife conspire. They fake a fast so that they can distract people and kill Naboth, right? So they totally disregard this fast. This is one of the most evil kings in the history of Israel. And God comes through a prophet and says, you're dead, your generations are dead, I'm wiping you off the face of the earth, gone. You don't treat my people and my Naboth like that. Naboth was a man in Israel. You know what King Ahab did? He fasted. He didn't just fast. He got down and he said, I'm going to stay on the ground. I'm going to get myself as low as I physically can get myself. And after this period of fasting, God said, I'm not going to destroy him. The evilest, I'm using evilest, is probably up for conjecture, right? One of the evilest kings in Israel who does something horribly bad. And God says, I'm not going to kill him. And he tells you why. He says, because he humbled himself. David goes to fast after this situation where he killed a man so he could be with that man's wife. And then because of that, he ends up having a child with that man's wife. And God said, I'm sorry, the child is going to die. And what does David do? He said, God, no, no, no. And he gets down. He gets down as low as he can get. And he stays there for 7 days. 7 days. Now, in this situation, the child still died. But God saw his heart. God saw his heart that he was truly repentant. That's where that Psalm 51 came out of, when he says, you don't desire sacrifices. I could be out there doing it, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to put myself flat on the ground. I'm just going to lower my heart. I'm going to be humble in everything I can do. Go look it up. Read the fasting verses. It's crazy how many times you see the words lowered, bowed, down, on the ground. That's what God's looking for. You have to go to work, so you should sit in your chair or stand or whatever you do at work, right? I'm not saying that. But it's our heart. A king in Babylon, when Daniel was there. Daniel and the king were friends. And then these people try to go after Daniel. They're like, this guy prays 3 times a day. We're going to get him. We're going to make the king. We're going to say, Mr. King, can we make a rule that no one can pray to you? Yeah, I like that rule. Just to me, I like that. Totally forgetting he's got a buddy, Daniel, that prays 3 times a day. They catch Daniel praying because he's praying, right? And what do? They send him to the lion's den. And what happens after he goes to the lion's den? The king's like, no, I did not realize this was going to happen. And so the king of a non-Israelite, non-Jewish country, Babylon, and what does he do? He fasts. And he says, I'm going to get down. I'm going to humble myself. And it says, and I'm reading between the lines here, because if you understand the history back then, they would turn on music. He would have a band playing to help him sleep. There would be other things. He kicked everybody out of his room and said, no, there's going to be no distraction. He fasted through the night. That doesn't count. No, I'm just kidding. But he fasted through the night. And he said, which is interesting, because we like to think, well, fasting is if I suffer, right? If I suffer throughout the day, then I'm fasting. And this king, he actually just went through the night. He didn't sleep, though. He didn't sleep. He didn't have his orchestra. He didn't do anything. He just focused. And I would read between the lines and say, he prayed to Daniel's God. God, I don't know what to do. And guess what? Daniel was saved. Daniel was saved. These are two horrible, evil people that were not one of God's chosen people. That God listened to their answer, not because of how long they fasted or all the stuff they gave up, but because of their heart, because of their humbleness. And so you start to tie these things together, these sacrifices and these fastings and all these things people were given to God, that he said, I don't want it. I don't accept it. I want your heart. It's way simpler than you're making it. I want your heart. He says, I want you to do justly and love mercy and walk humbly with my God. Walk humbly with your God. Well, that's great, Peter. We don't have tents and we don't have dirt floors and we don't have orchestras playing us to sleep at night. How do I lower myself? Well, let's break it apart and see what they were actually doing. They were putting their desires and motives. I wouldn't even call it second. They were completely flushing them out of the picture. David laid on the ground for 7 days. His desires, It wasn't just to eat, to play, to have fun, to get a sense of accomplishment. It was all gone. So what is it for us? What are the things, as far as getting down, getting humble, getting low, getting our hearts in the right position for these sacrifices and fastings that God doesn't want? He does want them. He just wants them with the right heart, right? Make sure I say that, right? What does it look like for me? Well, for me, maybe it looks like spending less time doing the things I want to do. I'm not saying I have to be to church every day praying 24/7. But maybe I got to bow to serve other people. Maybe I got to bow to be a better husband and serve my husband, serve my wife, serve my kids, right? It says in Isaiah 58, this is God talking through his prophet Isaiah to his people. They seek me day after day and delight to know my ways, like a nation that does what is right. Like a nation that does what is right and does not abandon the justice of their God. They ask me for righteous judgments. They delight in the nearness of God. They say, why have we fasted, but you have not seen? We've denied ourselves, and you haven't noticed. This is the people talking to God. We fasted, you didn't see it. We denied ourselves, you didn't notice. Look, you do as you please on the day of your fast. Oh, God's starting to answer here. Wait, you do what you want on the day of your fast. You oppress all your workers. You fast with contention and strife to strike viciously with your fist. You cannot fast as you do to help that you make your voice heard on high. God says, will the fast I choose be like this? A day for a person to deny himself, to bow his head like a reed, and to spread out sackcloths and ashes. Will you call this a fast and a day acceptable to the Lord? But then he says, if you are sacrificing and fasting, this is what comes out of it. The fast I choose, this is what comes out of it. We'll break the chains of wickedness. The fast will untie the ropes of the yoke to set the oppressed free and to tear off every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, to bring the poor and the homeless into your house, to clothe the naked when you see them, and not to ignore your own flesh and blood? Oh, yeah, you're going without food, and you turned your Facebook off for a week, but you're still ignoring your neighbor. You're still treating your wife like garbage. So where's your heart? You're obeying. You're cleaning that room. Man, this is tough for me to hear this. And when we do that, we can cry out to him, and he'll be there. Mark 7, chapter 5. Mark chapter 7, verse 5. Says, then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread and with unwashed hands? He answered and said to them, well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites? As it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts is far from me. So while half of this message is very convicting and condemning and challenging and saying, oh man, is my heart in the right place? The encouraging part of this message from God is that it only takes the heart being in the right place. If you start with that, anything you can bring to him is accepted. Anything we bring before this altar is accepted. When we come humbly and we come honestly and we stand here and we say, God, and we start with honesty and say, God, I am not worthy. And everything that has been good in my life is most likely came because of you. And I have been failing miserably for the last day, months, years, hours. And I don't even know what to bring. I don't know what to bring to this altar. I don't know what to bring to this church or to this prayer moment or whatever. I don't know what to bring. I just picture God sitting up there going, yes, that's the step I want you on right there. We can start here with honesty. We can start here with humble, humble hearts. Psalms 51. Going back to Psalms 51, we read verse 16. Verse 16 says, you do not want a sacrifice as I would give it. You are not pleased with a burnt offering. But David goes on and says, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. You will not reject. You will not turn away. You will not say it isn't good enough. Because if I come with a broken heart and a contrite spirit, God, you're going to honor it. The musicians could come up here. It's so much simpler than we try to make it at times. If you've been doing this for a long time and you're stuck in and you find yourself, and don't raise your hands or admit it, not everybody that comes down here has this. I'm just talking to different groups here. But if you find yourself stuck in a tradition of just doing it and you feel like maybe, just maybe, my heart isn't right. Maybe, just maybe, I'm one of those people whose sacrifices and fasts weren't getting accepted for some reason or another. You can come down here this morning with a humble heart and get yourself low, whether it's physically or just emotionally and mentally and spiritually. It doesn't matter. Do what your health and body can allow you to do. And if you can get yourself low and come to God with a humble heart, anything you bring is acceptable because you're starting with humility. And humility will lead you to repentance. Because when you start putting yourself aside, you start realizing that yourself has been doing a lot of stupid things. A lot of things that maybe God isn't always pleased with. And it's not that he's up here saying, you horrible person, strike with lightning. But when we tie ourselves to sin, and the very thing that he's against is sin, it's not that he's punishing us, it's that we're tying ourselves to the thing that he's punishing. God loves us. He wants us with him. Everything about his Bible is about trying to draw us closer to him. Whether you're this far from God or millions of miles away from God, he's drawing you to him. But it starts with a humble heart. If you could stand with me. I'm sure you're thinking, well, I don't know what to do. My past is too bad. It's too checkered. There's too much sin. There's too much garbage. That will make my sacrifice bad. That will make my fast bad. I didn't read that in any of those verses. Your past means nothing. Your past means nothing. Pastor Roy's been talking about declaring and decreeing. And as long as you keep decreeing that your past means something, then it does. As long as you keep decreeing and declaring that your sin and your failures and your not worthiness and the fact that you don't know how to do something means something, then it does mean something. But if we will come up to the front and we will humbly come before God and say, God, I'm going to obey your word. I don't know what that means right now. And we start with a little repentance. Forgive me. Get everything out of the way that shouldn't be there. Make my heart right. I want to be like David when he said, you don't want a sacrifice or I would give it. You want a broken spirit and a contrite heart. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a right spirit within me. Restore the joy of your salvation. Doesn't make sense, does it? That doesn't make sense. That's totally different. I need to work harder and read more self-help books and ask for advice. Nope. No. Hebrews 11:6 says that without faith, it is impossible to please him. In my brain, I like to think that obedience takes faith and faith takes obedience. So in this case, Maybe we could just check the box and come down here and try to really humble ourselves. Maybe we can step out in faith and say, God, I'm stepping out and I'm bringing an offering. But before I do, I want to humble my heart. I want to be in right standing with you. Search me, oh God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. See if there's anything in there that needs to be gone and wipe it away. God is here for you. It's so much simpler. Don't wait till you have the 1,000 rams. Don't wait. Come on down. Don't wait till you have all the oil and can offer your firstborn and are wearing the right suit and have been to Bible college. Don't wait for that. He said you're good now. Come on down. Just humble yourself. God wants to accept your sacrifice. He wants to be closer to you, and it starts here with humility.